This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later in the show, we'll talk with two scholars on evolutionary psychology, how centuries of human existence has shaped our responses, and how understanding our brain's evolutionary limitations could help us understand why now we're a bit overloaded. But first, it's October 11th, which means it's National Coming Out Day. The holiday was first created by the LGBT civil rights activist group called the Human Rights Campaign, or HRC, nearly three decades ago. When it began, it was in the midst of the AIDS crisis, which was largely associated with gay men in the 1980s. Since then, the spread of HIV and AIDS is much better understood, and the LGBT community as a whole has made several strides. The acknowledgement of legal civil unions across the nation rose. President Barack Obama abolished the controversial Don't Ask, Don't Tell law in 2011. And only 4 years later, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled same-sex marriages was a legal right in this country. With all of that progress, legally and even more so socially, the idea of a day designated for coming out may seem dated, but the HRC argues coming out now is just as important as it was then. Our producer, Rachel Iacovone, went to Southwest Florida Pride this weekend to talk with some festival goers about how they first came out.
To understand the importance of National Coming Out Day, one has to start at the beginning. So I began with a rather simple question. How did you come out?
I was actually getting in trouble for something, so I was getting yelled at. So in my mind, I was so young. I was like 13, and I was like, how worse can it get? So I was like, you know what, let me just tell them I think I'm gay.
I came out post-AIDS crisis. It was very different. It was almost you needed to come out because of the crisis in the political world. I think that's we're there again.
I came out to my parents when I was 19, and then I took it back. Because I was like, oh no, I was just going through a phase. And then I was officially like out, I'd say, by like 22, 23.
My mom kind of found out via social media. And, she didn't take very well to it.
I came out rather roughly. I went out, met someone, didn't come home until the next day. And in the meantime, my mom and dad thought I was kidnapped.
I came out to my mom actually when she was at the hospital. She died from a brain aneurysm, so I never actually got to say it to her.
I'm at day one of the 9th annual Southwest Florida Pride Festival, so please excuse the noise. It's a celebration after all. And what are they celebrating? Well, to answer that, you have to ask, how has it been since you came out?
Amazing. I will, like, truly quote the phrase, like, it gets better. Like, it's totally been amazing since then.
Each year has been better for me because I came to terms with who I was, the aspects of my life that aren't a lifestyle choice, but rather how I was born.
It's an indescribable feeling of relief.
I can tell when some people come out because they're doing cartwheels, and that's exactly what it is. You have so much energy. You're so free that... It's like doing cartwheels. It's childish. It's glee. It's bliss.
My confidence level has probably boosted about 300%.
Life is amazing. I wouldn't trade, like I said, I wouldn't trade my experience for anything. It was the way it should have happened, I guess.
Now, on the other side of things, the general consensus is that coming out changed their lives for the better. So, if many say they have known since birth, what kept them from coming out until their late teens? I'll spare you that montage because I got the same answer over and over again. Religion. And that common hindrance may be exactly why open and affirming churches, or churches that accept LGBT individuals, are the first few tents upon entering Southwest Florida Pride. Rachel Iacovone, WGCU News, Fort Myers.
Joining us now are two religious leaders whose congregations were at those tents at Southwest Florida Pride. Gabrielle Spukes is a deacon at Fort Myers Congregational United Church of Christ. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Deacon Jonathan Hollander from St. John the Apostle Metropolitan Community Church. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
We are talking about National Coming Out Day and religion. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK to become part of this conversation. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So both of your Fort Myers congregations and denominations overall are open and affirming. I'd like to ask you to explain to me what that means. How does a church get that kind of a label? And I'll start with you, Deacon Spukes from Fort Myers Congregational United Church of Christ.
Thank you, Julie. Open and affirming is really a process that the congregation has to agree on. And in our church, in the Fort Myers Congregational United Church of Christ, this was done in 2013. And basically, we had an overwhelming affirmative vote of the congregation. And the mission statement actually had to be changed also so that when people looked at our mission statement, they understood what open and affirming meant. So the big difference between traditional churches and or faithful churches is the fact that we do respect and honor the same-sex marriage agreement.
Well, so what brought that on in 2013?
I wasn't here.
Okay.
But I will tell you that it's a process a lot of the UCC churches have gone through. And it is something that we have several gay members, gay and lesbian members at our church. And I think it was very important that people understood that we are part of that church. And it how to expand that is to grow the comfort of people coming to our church and feeling comfortable in their own skin, if you want to say that.
So it seemed like it was something that needed to be – you had to come out and redefine things for people. So
correct.
That – I mean – and, you know, when you look at it from a real philosophical way, I mean, mm-hmm. a church should be open and accepting.
Exactly. That's what Jesus says.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of – I find it interesting that churches have to kind of redefine what that means because it can get confined by different, you know, points of view.
Exactly. But there are so many traditional churches out there that say they're welcoming, but in actuality, they cannot – gay or lesbian members cannot be part of the – deacons or any kind of, even for some cases, not even have a job or employment opportunity in that church. So I think an open and affirming church defines the fact that you are part of that congregation completely.
And not seen as in any other way different
exactly,
from anybody
exactly.
else. So Deacon Hollander from the St. John the Apostle Metropolitan Community Church, what does open and affirming mean at your congregation and what's it have to do with how your church was founded?
Absolutely. Open and affirming means we're inclusive. There's no exclusion at all to our denomination, and that's really important because, as you just heard, there are some denominations that will have exclusion criteria in order for you to even participate in the worship services. We do not. Our denomination began in 1968 by a gay man who had been removed from his pastoring of a Pentecostal as well as Baptist church because of the fact that he came out. And therefore, he felt this calling from God in 1968, October 6th to be exact. So we're celebrating our 49th year, this calling from God that, no, there's more to this and I should not be excluded from my faith in God. And so he began a very small group of 12, which I think is very fascinating. And from there, Metropolitan Community Church has grown to be around the world. St. John the Apostle Metropolitan Community Church in Fort Myers just happens to be one of multiple churches that belong to that denomination at this time.
So the complete church was founded based on this feeling of being separated or having been literally separated, not feeling of, but being separated. And he said, no, let's start one that's kind of based on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When he felt that he was not welcome at all to his faith base, there was a need to create this denomination.
So as Rachel pointed out, while she was at Pride, most of the people that she spoke with attributed their delay in coming out to their religious upbringing. A lot of people, a lot said that the Bible is black and white on the issue, and plenty of people outside of Pride seem to agree. So how does an open and affirming church get around some of those cherry-picked Bible verses like Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22, which I'm sure you've heard 1,000 times by now, which says, "You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination." There are people that want to point to that in black and white. So I'll give each of you an opportunity to express your feelings on that particular verse.
Sure, absolutely. You use the right term, cherry pick, because we can also take other scripture readings and use them as well to state, for example, women have no right to have any part of a worship service, that they are to be excluded. The Bible is an extremely important book to me. I'm going to speak to myself only in this case. And I believe scriptures have a lot to teach us. But what I don't believe the scripture has to teach us is that there are exclusion to God's kingdom and that people do not belong. They identify themselves in different ways. The time that the scripture readings that you just spoke to were written, that to be quite honest with you, that was a long, long time ago. this world is different today. 2017 is not the way it was 1000 BC. So we have to look that God's – our knowledge of God and our understanding of God has evolved. God has always been the same, but we have evolved, and we understand the world differently today.
Mm-hmm. And different interpretations of the word.
Exactly.
Gabrielle, what would you say to those types of verses?
I've done several different Bible study classes and listened to people that are lecturing those. And it's interesting because, as you said, it's a long time ago. The Bible was written, and the understanding of that was completely different, and the interpretation of the Bible in many ways is different. So to me, there are a few. I think there's maybe six total passages in the Bible. And when you look at the rest of the Bible, there is no comment about it. And that's what I think we've been taught, to look at those six and spew hate in so many ways, that there's so much good news in the Bible, that we shouldn't just focus on those. And I think that it's very difficult for people that have been brought up in certain family circles where religion is a very important part of their life. And they get reminded by their pastors often that these passages exist. And that's what I think is also very difficult for them to come out, because they hear it over and over again, and they're afraid and ashamed.
And if I may add to that real quickly, is that part of what our responsibility as open and affirming churches are is to give the other message. The true message, the correct message, that God is love, God is inclusion. And unfortunately, you have – those of us who have been, are gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, questioning, et cetera, we have heard that other message so much now that we believe that is the message. Well, we need churches that said, no, that is not the message.
Well, the whole book is pretty long, you know. Yeah. And we're talking about six verses out of – how many verses are there?
Oh, my
thousands?
Goodness. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I believe. So I'm just kind of like missing the forest for the trees, I suppose.
Correct.
A couple of years ago, Pope Francis made waves in the Catholic Church for saying, if someone's gay and searches for the Lord and has goodwill, who am I to judge? Despite it coming from the Pope himself, it didn't change the Catholic Church's stance on LGBT rights, at least publicly. Have you seen any movement towards tolerance in your interactions with denominations who aren't yet open and affirming? Do you see other large traditional churches making any changes or inching that direction?
I think that's where the welcoming churches come in. They are still divided in a sense of exactly what their theology is, but they're trying to allow people of LGBTQA in. But at the same time, it is not necessarily completely inclusive and certainly not completely welcoming. The congregation's divided. And I think that's what's a real challenge, because you can put a welcoming sign out, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's accepted.
Maybe not thoroughly. Maybe they're
Correct.
Testing the waters
yes.
and seeing
yes.
how tolerant their congregation's going to be.
Correct. That's how I feel anyway.
It's kind of taking a while to get there. Do you feel like maybe with the – I'm going to ask you, Deacon Jonathan Hollander, in a time of such acceptance of LGBT community, do you think that maybe churches are going to be coming around, or do you feel like in the current climate we're taking a couple steps backward?
That's a very good question. I'm going to answer it this way. First of all, one thing I wanted to talk real quickly about the history of my denomination of Metropolitan Community Church, it was founded on the ideal that it was going to be a temporary denomination, that it would – the other denominations, the major mainline denominations would change. They would recognize this and change, and therefore my denomination would no longer be necessary. 49 years later, we're not there. Do I think that there's going to be the possibility that the major mainline denominations will become more open and affirming? Yes and no. It just depends upon their tradition, because if you're a male-dominated traditional church, then you're more than likely not going to change, versus if you are a equal qualities church with gender, you have a higher possibility that you will change, because you recognize that it takes all of us to make a church. So some will and some will not. I really truly believe that.
Yeah, but how do you feel right now with the current climate I mean, it just seems like in the last year or two, things have gotten a bit more tenuous. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that? Do you feel reverberations of that within your church?
I think that right now what we're all feeling, in particularly in the LGBT community, is that society is bixed about us again. I think that it does resonate to the churches as well. I think that there's this sense that we might lose rights, we might lose our marriage equality, we might be relegated. We've already heard things that happen with our transgender brothers and sisters being saying that you're no longer worthwhile to be in our services, armed services. So there is that sense of uneasiness, but I believe also that those of us who are out and those of us who are a Christian strongly believe that the message of hope is going to win the day.
Do you feel like the congregation such as yours, both of yours, give a little bit of extra strength in these kinds of tenuous times?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. It is scary out there sometimes when you're hearing the news and proclaiming that religious freedom rights, and, you know, it's a little frightening to know that you can't go out and buy a cake for a wedding for a same-sex couple. And so there's a lot of that news, but I think that once we walk into our church, we feel the love and we feel the connection of everyone in it. And, you know, we are not a predominantly gay church. We have gay members, but we also have straight allies, and, you know, they are loving and welcoming, truly with arms open to us. And that's,
do you have
important.
Any idea? I'm not sure that you do like a head count or anything, but I mean, do you have kind of what percentage, do you know? Or
oh, well, I would probably say we have maybe a 20%, 15 to 20% gay population.
And what is your, what are your Sunday services like?
We have one service.
Okay.
We are not a very large church. We're about 200 people, maybe 225. And then, of course, in season, we
everything
populate.
Grows.
But you know, I think that – I'm sorry. I forgot what we were going.
What is your Sunday service like?
Okay. So we have a 10 o'clock service, and it is a what I would consider a traditional service. We have scripture. We have a choir. You know, we listen to the Bible verse. So it – but at the same time, you can feel the love. I mean, people hold hands when they're singing. They, you know, stand up and hug each other. So I really do feel that it's an all-inclusive environment. Environment when you walk into that room.
And Jonathan, I want to ask also, what are your services like on the weekend?
You would think you walk into an Episcopal service because it's very similar to the sense of that we stand for the gospel, we have communion services, we have a prayer corner, everything that you would have no concept that that in my church that the majority of the people are gay and lesbian, transgender couples or individuals. We're the opposite direction. About 15 to 20% of our congregation are straight couples.
Okay. So there's a kind of an inverse equation here. So it's kind of interesting. Are there other services outside of, you know, Sunday services, like things for LGBT persons? Like what else, what other kind of things does your church do in the way of like support groups or anything?
Well, yes. Our building is located on McGregor Boulevard, and we are open to many support groups in the community. So such as Gay Alcoholic Anonymous and things like that, the AIDS come to our places on Thursdays to do HIV testing. So we're open to the community in a lot of ways, but we also have services outside of those traditional services. For example, tomorrow we're having a vigil to remember Las Vegas victims and things like that. So we're very strong in other community activities that happen.
All right. Well, we have run up against time, but I want to thank you both for coming in and talking with me. It was a pretty quick conversation.
Yes,
but we
was.
Got a lot in there. Deacon Gabriel Spukas, Spukes from Fort Myers Congregational United Church of Christ, and also Deacon Jonathan Hollander from St. John Metropolitan Community Church. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so very much.
Coming up, images of evolution generally show a primate eventually walking upright with improving posture throughout the eons, but what those images don't show are the imprints made on the human brain over time. Up next, we'll talk with evolutionary psychologists who say that it's possible our modern world is a bit too much for how far along our brains have evolved. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.